Angie Fioni.
Here.
Okay, Pledge Allegiance.
I'm also here, by the way.
Tom, right. Tom is here, and so is Melinda.
Tom Kakanji.
And Larry Ritchie.
Yes.
Larry. Here.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America, and to the republic for which it stands, one nation,
under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Public comments. Do we have any public comments? Do we have any public? We have one public. Any comments? Okay. Chair's comments. The only comment I have is that we do have the GIS proposal for landfill siting, and I don't know if we have that on the agenda.
I don't think it's on the agenda, but maybe it should be.
So we'll add that under new business.
Okay. Okay, that makes sense.
So it would be the GIS landfill siting proposal. Okay. Approval of minutes. I read the minutes and sent some things in. Does anyone else have any comments?
I read them also, and I'll make a motion to move them as read.
Okay.
Seconded.
And I hear a second from Tom. Excellent. Okay. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Motion carried.
Yes. The next regular board meeting is scheduled for August 23rd. I was wondering why it wasn't August 30th.
It's the fourth Monday.
Fourth, yeah.
Oh, okay. So I just assumed we always met the last Monday. So it is the fourth Monday. Will that work for everyone?
Sure.
Yes.
Okay. Okay, general reports, recycling outreach team program update.
Thank you. So we provided a qualitative overview of some of the initiatives that we're working on this month. Obviously, our Zero Waste Seminar project is at the forefront of all things recycling education. We have had 61 people who've already logged in and actually participated in our webinars, and we have another 65 people that are signed up for our last two webinars, Small Plastics, Big Impact, later tonight with our guests Riverkeeper and SUNY New Paltz. And then we'll have a Reuse It, Regift It, Repair It webinar on Wednesday. We have guest speakers from Hudson Valley Repair Cafe, Habitat for Humanity, People's Place, and the Town of New Paltz, representing the Reuse Center. So I thought it might be interesting to share with you. We've been surveying our participants both before and after they attend the webinars in order to collect some more demographic information and also kind of gauge what the impact of the classes are on people and the way that they feel about single-use plastics. So I thought that might be interesting for the board to hear some of those comments on the survey. We asked the participants what pollution prevention strategies that they pledge to do now that they've taken the classes. So anonymously, some people said they'll look for replacements for products that come in plastic containers, look for opportunities to use refillable containers. Another person said they'll send a communication each week to a company or a brand that they buy products from to suggest plastic alternatives. Others said consume fewer products that contain single-use plastics. Try to buy less overpackaged stuff. No more clamshells, someone said. I'll be even more careful what I purchase to ensure items can be repaired for a long life and reused or recycled, and use materials other than plastic whenever possible. So I wanted to share those comments with you because I feel it really tells you what people learn when they come to our webinars by hearing from them what they now pledge to do. And we also ask them to just share their general comments with us, after receiving the survey, and everyone felt they were fantastic presentation, great information, we need to spread the word. Someone said the information was very well presented, they'd like to see this taught in the schools. Thank you for having this program. So Melinda and I are still working hard the last week of the seminar, and we'll have more results after the next two classes and more folks participate in the survey. But so far, from what we can tell, it does look like the survey has had a very big impact on people.
or the, excuse me, the webinars have had a very big impact on people. We asked people before and after the class if they felt plastic pollution was an environmental problem and a social problem. And so far we could tell that the responses have increased for both of those questions. So we'll have more information to share in the near future. And in the meantime, we're also just preparing for, you know, our next household hazardous waste collection events coming up on August 21st. We have 256 appointments. So it's almost full, and we'll look ahead to that. Any questions?
No, very good.
That is wonderful. You know, the real problem with the clamshells, besides that, when you open it up and the berries are in there, underneath it they put some sort of something or other. So now you don't have just plastic. You have plastic from something or other else. So even if we had a way to recycle it, we'd have to get that piece of whatever it is out of there.
We get a lot of the questions about clamshells, and Melinda and I always say it's best to avoid them altogether. You know, wanting to recycle them incorrectly is everyone's impulse, but you can avoid a lot of that those types of packaging by shopping at your farmer's market, signing up for a CSA, you know, growing that item yourself. The two common things that come in clamshells are the strawberries and lettuce. And those two things are both really easy to grow, even if you're just a beginner
gardener.
Strawberries. So
strawberries,
that's what we like
to
tell people is, you know, please don't recycle them, but look for ways that you can avoid them altogether.
The mice eat them in the winter. This time you don't have any plants, you have to start over again every year. But yes, anyway, great. Okay. Get the word out. That's the main thing, right? Went to a musical event over the weekend, did a lot of talking about recycling, etc. Let's see. MSW tonnage report.
Sure. So we continue to be over budget on our MSW, and the sludge continues to be under budget. I think what happened with the sludge is we did see a decrease that we weren't able to identify. I know Charlie and I looked into it at the end of last year. But then also this year, with the going down to Rockland, we have to separate out all the grit and the rags and all that stuff. So that volume, we didn't find out until way after the budget was submitted that was going to be pulled out. So that's a portion of why that's under budget as well. We're over budget. Things are good right now. And on the recycling tonnage report, I wanted to point out that the food waste was, we did 356 ton, and I believe a good chunk of that was organics bringing us stuff back. I don't know.
Hmm.
They've come, they've gone. Charlie, have you heard anything with them coming back this past month?
Really, you know, it depends on the farmers, how much feed they need. The proximity of where the food waste is being gathered and where we are. So it's, you know, I mean, we're getting a little bit more than we were, but we're certainly not up to where, you know, they were coming three, four times a week.
No.
So.
But compared to the beginning of the year, though.
And American Transport also fell off. We're two biggest haulers, right? American Transport and Organics. And American Transport is taking a lot of their stuff down to CRP. So that place that opened up down Westchester.
Well, we'll see what the new law brings us come January.
You know, I think the most important thing is, Catherine, is that, you know, we have a facility and we do provide those services. And that was our intention from the start. We knew long ago that these laws were going to be coming into place, and we wanted to make sure that we were prepared for it. We didn't want to have laws that were on the books and no place to bring it, so it gets thrown away anyway. So we did our share.
And we'll see what happens, you know. I did mention to the chair of the legislature that we definitely have to have in place an administrative law judge, because even if we have someone who's busy enforcing, we have no way to administer penalties and collect them. Without that, we're not able to function properly.
It's a snowball effect, right, from when Single Stream took place. We are actually going backwards, and this agency needs a recourse, and we don't have that, to do something about the haulers that aren't recycling.
it's hard for the new up-and-coming small companies that come along and want to start picking up garbage because they're forced to do single stream. Even though we offer a MRF that is free, to get customers, you have to provide that service of single stream. So it's a challenge. And now with these automated trucks, some of the drivers want to get home early, so they got room on the recycling end, not the garbage end, so they throw it over on the recycling side, and then when it comes into our places, it's like, well, you know, what are you doing? You guys recycling the garbage, and then they blame it on the customers, or they're not recycling, and it's like, so there's just no way to actually go after these folks. But if we had a place where we could have a judge make a decision, and we started affecting their pockets, you know, it might slow down and curb it a little bit. I think it would actually be better than what we have now, for sure. Right now we have nothing.
It wouldn't be that hard to collect photographic evidence.
No. And I also want to just add, when we talk about a place to bring compost, you know, this whole thing started off. It wasn't about just buying some blowers and a timer and throwing them on the ground with some pipes. You know, listen, we had a glass problem, you know, that we had to find a solution for. We had a site problem that we had to find a solution for, a box problem, storage box problem that we had to find a solution for, you know. And then when we started off, Larry knows, right, we took the blacktop of where the glass was and we started using that. And then when we expanded out, it was okay to go on in areas that was, you know, that did not have a pavement or blacktop. But then after a while, that created a lot of problems, right, Larry?
Correct.
Some pooling, puddling, odors. So we spent a year all in-house putting all this concrete down, which you folks have seen. So, and here we are now. So we've come a long ways, and we've dealt with a lot of problems to get where we are. So now we have another – we had no idea at the time that when we rushed to get all this done that this law was going to be put off in you know, another year. So here we are. So, but we're still ready, and we still provide that service. And the site is wonderful, right, Lon?
Yeah. I did 31 inspections, Catherine, so far, the odor roots, and we've had no issues. In fact, on one of my, last week on one of my odor inspection routes, I ran into the DEC, and they were out there on the back road monitoring also, and they said they had an unverifiable anonymous complaint about odors. And that was also after the meeting that you and I attended, and we told them that DEC was the agency in charge of, you know, the regulatory authority over the composting. So someone called in a generic complaint. So they went out, but we've had zero odors.
Right.
And
well,
it's operating exceptionally well.
I think the sewage treatment plant is still a problem.
Well, it's funny you mention that. When we were out with DEC, when I stopped at the DEC, it was parked at the bridge. So I gave their inspector, who was very new, was someone I knew when I was employed there. I said, these are the areas I would go, you know, that thing. I said, one of the sewage treatment plant. We drove down there and the plant was having a problem. So he was able to document an odor issue at the plant.
Right. Well,
Larry, was there any sign that they were expanding that plant?
You know, we talked to the supervisor, you know, at the meeting. The plant was built in 1955. It was damaged by one of the hurricanes. They put some clarifiers in. They're having, his exact words were, we're having a really difficult time dealing with our sludge. The plant is very obsolete in design. And he said they are even restricting development in the area because they have no way to manage the solid waste at the existing plant. So they've got problems. They know.
They actually trucked the sludge from that site to the one over on the Esopus, wherever that is. I saw it on the map, but I'm not sure where it is.
Well, they had outdoor sand filter sludge drying beds where you basically take the sludge that's accumulated and they put it on these outdoor beds and it runs through a sand filter system and then bleeds back into the discharge while they're trying to dry it to dispose of it. So that's also an odor issue. It's an outdoor, open-air operation.
Larry, wasn't that plant originally intended for the Whittier Housing Project, which surrounds the plant?
They said the plant operator, and this is only what the supervisor told us. I have no verification of this. He said the project went bankrupt, and they inherited that plant to be able to service the people who had already purchased homes in Whittier and the surrounding area. So it was, they kind of got stuck with what was built and what was there. And in 1955, there wasn't a terrible amount of environmental regulations. So they're struggling with their plans.
But something else happened to it in 1964, because there's that old DEC directory of plants, and it's listed in there, and it says that it's to accommodate, it's a little less than 500 people, yeah. 594 or something like that. But I would bet.
I think they're over double that.
It's probably more than twice that.
And it's the design.
It's unfortunate.
One of the things we talked about, Charlie, about the design is a pump station design. And how it works is on one side of the road, you have an underground storage tank. The sewage collects up to a certain level. They have an eviscerator in there that grinds it. And when it reaches a certain level, it pumps across the street to the plant. And one of the problems I've seen in my former career at multiple plants is that between 10:30 at night, 11 o'clock at night, till 5:30, 6 o'clock in the morning, this sewage is sitting hours before they get a volume of material enough to transfer over. So what happens is it becomes more odorous, more septic while it sits there, and then when everybody's up in the morning flushing toilets, taking a shower, it blasts, it loads the plant, and you get this localized odor problem. Wow. But by 8:30, 9 o'clock, you know, that material has been gone through, and it's basically just, you know.
Larry, it's no different like when the homeowner, right, who has a septic tank, right, when he has to pump it and he pops the lid off of it, right?
Yeah,
well, that's
exactly.
The odors that escape, it's the same concept.
So,
we started a little late.
Okay.
No worries. Just wanted to let you know.
Okay, let's see. Are we recycling tonnage report?
I spoke to that until
okay.
We got
food waste.
Okay. Great. Treasurer's report is usually next. Yep.
So for the month of June, we did 9,906 tons of MSW, 3,504 tons of C&D. There's no revenue line items to note. Total revenues were $1,619,505. No expense line items to note either. Total operating expenses for the month, $1,328,420, which gave us net operating revenues of $291,085. So our year-to-date fund balance is at a deficit of $504,142.
Which is pretty good considering we're just entering into August.
Yeah, usually in the past, usually August, September would usually be where we would break even in the past, you know, 4 or 5 years, so except for last year.
Tim, are you going to be on track to present your draft budget to the legislature?
We don't present to the legislature. I present to you
to the
guys.
Executive. The executive.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
I mean, what date are you shooting for? What are you looking at?
August. There's always our August board meeting.
Okay.
This is when we present our draft budget. Because I have to get letters out to the county executive and the towns as well.
Okay. Good.
You guys have to approve that.
Yeah.
That's right. We do.
Madam Chairman, I'll move that we accept the treasurer's report as read.
Do I hear a second?
Seconded.
Tom seconds it. Okay. All in favor of approving the monthly treasurer's report, say aye.
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 Aye. Someone's falling asleep out there.
She's waving.
Oh. Oh, good. Excellent.
Sorry, the dogs are barking.
Oh. Cats are meowing. You know, I fed the cat before I left. She was very insistent.
The MRF cost center analysis for June, sale of recyclables for the month, $39,441. We only sold fiber products this month. Transportation disposal costs, $5,537, so a net revenue, $33,904. Personnel expenses were $34,787, and the operating was $3,378. Which gave us a total of those two categories of $38,165, which shows a net loss of $4,261. But year to date, we are at a net income of $27,221. Charlie, I think we got some plastic that was moved.
For
PET. For July, just so everyone's aware.
Yeah, one load of PET.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. And the prices are still high. 112 for natural, 26 for peat. You know, 340 for gross ton for the Koya cans. So the prices are still really good.
What are you getting for OCC?
OCC, we're up over 100.
That's great.
So, yeah. You know, so always, I think it's 140 we're at, Tom.
Amazing.
Listen, I'll tell you what's really great is the fact that we're not paying to get rid of mixed news, which is really great. You know, up to $70 a ton is they're great numbers. So that's really fortunate for us. And there's no expense for the city of Kingston on the hard mix either, because we're getting some money for that. So that benefits the city of Kingston. It benefits us too. But if we fall down, remember Catherine, if we fall down on that, you know, so where there's a negative number, then the city of Kingston would have to pay that. Yeah.
Right.
So.
Yeah. Okay. Administrative matters. Does our executive director have any administrative matters?
No, I have a couple items for old business.
Okay.
Angie, if you want to speak to Stony Brook, was here and did their waste audit the week of July
13th.
Yeah.
Yeah, I have some notes about that. You know, Stony Brook University, as you know, they're conducting a waste data and analysis research project that's sponsored by New York State DEC through the Environmental Protection Fund. It's led by faculty researchers in their Department of Technology and Society at the College of Engineering and Applied Sciences. And they support a lot of undergraduate and graduate student researchers in this project. So we've been participating in the research study alongside other towns, the town of Brookhaven, the town of Islip, Oneida Herkimer Solid Waste Authority, Delaware County, and more. So they were here for 1 week this month. The team examined several samples of municipal solid waste from both public and private waste collection programs, as well as a little bit of dual stream recycling. So the research team actually sorted through and characterized samples of the municipal solid waste into over 40 categories. Very fascinating work, and I think that the project's a really good opportunity for us. The information could be very useful in the future for solid waste planning purposes, but we're able to look at target samples of this waste or recycling and evaluate if there's any trends in disposal, evaluate the efficacy of recycling programs, again, for both public or private waste collection programs, and other goals that we've been working with the team to develop, and they've just been extremely professional. It was a great visit as a first kickoff to this, and they'll be coming back for 1 week each summer for the next 5 years. So I'm really excited. We're all really excited about what information can be gleaned from participating in the study.
And we didn't get any indication as to when we would have some data from them, right?
No, they're going to take it all in. Like I said, they had a dozen samples. They sorted all into each sample into 40 categories, so they have to input all that information before they get it back to us. But the greater goal of their project is to try to understand these patterns, what people are throwing out, where, you know, if there's any patterns to that, and better understand recycling as a byproduct.
That would be interesting to see how the different locations vary.
Absolutely.
Yeah, they were here for 4 days at Ulster, and they spent 1 day down at New Paltz.
Oh, okay, great.
And based on the information we get, you know, maybe we want to switch that up in the future. Mm-hmm. It's up to us if there's something specific mm-hmm. that we want to look at, they work with it.
Could you make a report to Emily Hauser? Because she did reach out to me and ask me about that. And I said that you would get back to her so she would know what was going on.
Yeah, the information I just shared, I'd be happy to brief her on what the project is.
As long
but we
she
don't
knows
have the results.
That something's
of the,
happening. Maybe
of the
we
project.
Don't have
yeah.
piles of results, but at least so she knows, because she did inquire. And I did send her inquiry on to you, but I want to make sure that we keep her going, because she's part of the Zero Waste Committee, I believe.
Very good. I'd be happy to share that with her.
And is their sampling just annual, or does it capture seasonality in the waste stream in any way?
I believe that's their goal, to go to different locations at different times of the year. And, I mean, they were here after the 4th of July. So obviously they're going to have a very different scope of what people are throwing out after that, you know. So it's all in correlation with going to different places at different times of the year and what they find.
Sure. I'm asking, are they going to resample our waste stream in any other season?
Each summer,
I think, is the
scope of our
So it'll be longitudinal snapshot of summer as a season, not like a fall sampling and a winter sampling. And
look it up.
Well, I think they have to fit it into their academic year.
Yeah, whatever works. I mean, some data is better than no
probably
data.
What's going on?
And the other item I wanted to mention that Larry had already hit on is we did get invited to the Town of Ulster board meeting a couple Thursdays ago. And they asked us to give a presentation, which really was just a background of our composting operation. And then some of the town councilmen had some questions that we responded to. Some of the constituents who were on site asked some questions that we responded to. We actually had a long conversation with two constituents afterwards. And overall went really well. They had asked for a couple things to pass along. They wanted an actual complaint response, like they want something a little more formal, but we also worked that in with something else that we were already planning on doing that Angie's gotten the work on, and that is mailing out, you know, an educational mailing along with here's if you have a complaint or you have any questions, concerns, comments. What was it, an EDDM, EDMM?
Yeah, it's called Every Door Direct Mailing.
Yeah, yeah, so that we can target who it's going to, which will be really helpful because they, you know, I indicated to them we want to be, you know, communicate a lot more, you know, amongst the community, and this is one way for us to do that. And the other thing was they did ask if we ever were to develop anything in the adjoining property that we just, you know, include their planning department, even though we're not required to. They asked if we would be good neighbors and just include them in that. And Larry pointed out to them that we can't do anything without full-blown, you know, seeker and all that good stuff with the DEC as well.
Right. The DEC really takes first place in doing that. But
so they were happy with
that. Yeah, I was kind of hesitant to do that, but there's not much their planning board could do one way or the other. So if we're going to plan something, we'll let them know.
We'll be scrutinized enough through the DEC anyway. So
it's not scheming or anything.
Permit process as public comment period. I mean, they could be involved in that step Catherine along as they're doing the permitting. But a lot of times they post in the ENB and a lot of people don't see the notifications. So it would be certainly easy enough to say, hey, DC public comment period is running for this length of time, send them an email, and then they could comment.
I think the supervisors usually CC'd on any type of the notifications like that too.
I mean, currently we can't even store metal boxes on the property, so until we do a modification, whenever I get around to it, because everything seems to be stopping me from doing what I need to do, until we do a modification, we can't even store a metal box on that property. So. So there's no need for anybody to be concerned of anything because modifications don't happen overnight.
I would imagine, supposing we were to put my imaginary waste-to-energy plant over there, DEC would conduct a seeker investigation, is that correct? Or do we do it, or?
You know, I can't comment on their current staffing levels, but something of that magnitude, Catherine, they would probably be lead agency on the seeker.
Okay.
And that's just my opinion. You know, we have on smaller applications for other things, we have allowed the, you know, an agency like this or the local municipality to be a lead agency, but a waste-to-energy plant is not a small operation, and it's by no means a short-term permitting operation.
I'm on my local town planning board, and I'm really the person who does all the seeker work. Because you need somebody who really understands the whole process and has to deal with it appropriately.
Yeah, 12 years I was on Northern Downs planning.
Yes, so you get pretty good at it after a while.
Tom, could you hand me my water, please?
It's not something you are intuitive about in the beginning. So.
Tim, my understanding from dealing with Town of Ulster a long time ago is whether they have lead agency status, whatever, they basically just want some notification that you're planning on utilizing the parcel.
Yeah, that was more of a specific concern, but their general concern is just they felt like they weren't getting heard. So that was why, you know, I have a pretty good relationship with Supervisor Quigley. So one of the things, like I said, we want to make sure is that we're communicating more with them than we had in the past. Mm-hmm. And hopefully that'll resolve potential issues before they ever become issues going forward. Yep.
They had an idea that the composting operation was going to be moved over there.
Yeah, they did still think that was happening.
When we visited with them, and we explained, no, that was not the case. We're going to keep it right where we poured the concrete.
And based on their complaints, moving it 1,000 feet wasn't going to change anything.
And I also went through the DEC requirements for increasing the tonnage and how DEC permitting works with them. And I think they understood after we were done explaining to them that, you know, this is not an arbitrary process, and it's it's not based on equipment or technology. It's based on the need and how DEC approaches that.
And Councilman Van Cleek also called me the next day just to thank me again and thank us for, you know, going over there and communicating, really.
Yeah, I think a lot of the people who attended the meeting were also favorable that we showed up, we talked about it, we tried to explain everything we could so they would know.
That's all I have.
Okay. Let's see. Do we have any old business?
Yes.
Okay.
Recently, board member Tom Kakandis sent out a very interesting flyer, Extended Producer Responsibility, and Maine passed a law that they want the producers of recyclable materials to start to pick up the tag. Very interesting article. And I think, did we try to get Maine's law? Angie, do you know?
I don't have a copy of the law.
No, I thought we were going to send there to see if we could get a copy of the law to see how it works. Because we don't want it to just become a tax that's passed on to the consumer. We want to know the inner workings of how they intend to fund the recycling effort. Did you get anything more than what you said?
No, I mean, it's pretty early days, and for what it's worth, I don't know that it's even... I wanted to just wave the flag like it's been talked about forever. Here's a state that actually passed the law. But in reality, it'll be 6 months, and then it'll be a NYSAR session where somebody actually analyzes the planned implementation. Because the lag, just like New York State, they've got to go through a regulatory promulgation process. It could be up to a year. Could be, I don't know how fast Maine works. So we might not really know details about what they intend, how they intend to implement the law until they promulgate the regulation.
The way that EPR on packaging has worked in places like Quebec and, you know, in Canada, the consumers pay a very small amount more for the products that they buy that are in packaging. We're talking about either a few pennies or fractions of a penny, depending on the type of container. So like a glass jar would be different than a cereal box. That money goes into a fund that's, you know, fostered by a not-for-profit like group for EPR. And then that funding is distributed back out to municipalities or other types of public recycling programs to help compensate for the recycling of those containers, or if they're not covered in recycling programs, to help offset the cost of that. That's the gist of how it works. So that, yes, the consumers do pay more, but it also includes requirements for the manufacturers of those brands and products to incentivize them to make more recyclable packaging or reduce their packaging or use post-consumer recycled content or sustainably forested paper. So it's kind of built in to incentivize those brand owners to make more sustainable choices. But you're correct in thinking, yes, the consumer does end up paying a little bit more, but it's, you know...
But not a tax.
It's not a tax. It's built into the cost structure for that package or that product. And it's not just food items. I named a couple examples, but it's other types of packaging as well. Did you want to add to that?
Just like the paint, you know, the latex paint.
There's also, when the governor signed the bill into law, there were some changes made so that it exempts small businesses with revenues under $5 million. So, you know, it's still changing, you know, as we speak. But it is the first in the nation, and we should be following it really closely.
New York State's done some similar stuff, like the spill compensation fund that runs the spills program for New York State. It's 4 cents a barrel on every barrel of petroleum sold in New York State goes into the spill compensation fund, which funded DEC spill response program for emergency response, cleanup, remediation of those types of projects. So very similar. They tax the original industry producer, and we, you know, that it was distributed out to the agencies to go forward to do the work. So it's been done here.
And it wasn't so long ago, I think you sent this out about extended producer responsibility for advocates. Isn't that something that you sent out?
I believe so, yeah.
And Tom sent this out. I think we're on the right track with this, but we gotta stay on top of it.
I think Oregon is also very close to passing a law, but I don't know anything about it.
I think, and what I'm hearing from Maine, because I have a son that lives up there, that since the Indian Point power plant was shut down, it left a major gap in power production in the Hudson Valley, and that Maine is now clearing some of its forests up there so that they can tap a line into the Montreal power grid and bring it down to make up the difference from Indian Point. So Maine has problems also.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, I have another thing on the Authority Budget Office webinars. Tom, did you take the webinar? No?
No.
Okay, I have all the information you need right here, and I'll give it to you.
Sure, thanks.
The information of the Authority Budget Office, .newyork.gov, their phone number, and they have three dates set up for August. The 4th of August is a Wednesday, the 11th of August is a Wednesday, and the 18th of August is a Wednesday. I'll give you this. All of those meetings, webinars, are between the hours of 9:30 and 11. You might want to keep that.
Sure, thanks.
That's all I have.
Yeah, I think I have to take it over again because I was reappointed after finishing somebody else's term.
Yeah.
So I probably have to take it over.
It was very informative. As a matter of fact, and this is something that I wanted to pass around anyway, this is the New York State Legislative Committee that authorities answer to. And this is where these are the people that pull the strings on these authorities. You might want to look at that.
Well, thank you.
Someone PDF that to me. I'd appreciate it.
Yep.
Thank you.
What'd she say she wants one?
Did you get the proposal for the GIS?
Yeah, and I just roughly went through it, and I have some notes.
Okay, good. Interesting.
That's all I have, Madam Chairman.
Okay. Let's see. And then we get to new business, which we have the GIS proposal, which I can hand out.
I grabbed a copy already.
You got a copy? Okay. Well, I'll pass it around this way.
Yeah, I got mine.
You got yours?
Yeah.
Okay.
I'll pass it to you.
Yeah.
You have one, Ian?
I'd like to have one. Thank you.
I think I have one in my pile of crap, yeah. I think I printed it on my way out the door and then had to run back to the printer.
Extras.
Nope, I don't have it.
Give us one back.
I need another one.
Need another?
I thought I had it here, but I'm not sure. Oh, what's this? No, oh, this is something else.
Full circle.
Great. Okay. Thank you. Anyway, Paul Rubin prepared this based on, I went back and looked at the time when we had the county solid waste commission that was reviewing potential ways of dealing with solid waste. Stephen Parisio from the DEC and his intern developed a little geographic information system that they went through the regulations that say, you know, you can't put a landfill on steep slopes or where there are wetlands, and there's a whole series of characteristics of sites that are mostly things you have to eliminate. So I got a new copy of the regulations as well as the old regulations and a listing of a spreadsheet that we had from that, and gave it to Paul Rubin, and he and I work together occasionally. He's the GIS person. I am not the GIS person.
You're a doctor?
I am the map printer. So he makes the GIS things, and I edit things and stuff like that. But so anyway, so he's gone through, and he's got our proposal here. It states the objectives, which is develop this GIS, and compile all the rules of siting, and so forth. And then over on page 3, landfill siting restrictions. Those are the one-by-one things that they go through with the geographic information system and eliminate those. And a couple of biggies are the New York State-owned watershed areas, the New York City-owned watershed lands, and the New York State-owned lands, any park lands that the state owns. Those are pretty big amounts of property in our county, so that's going to take some out. There's also carbonate topography, because you have the karst problem. Carbonate rocks are soluble, so then you get solution channels in it, and you know, you don't really have solid bedrock underneath if you were to try to put a landfill on it. So that's one of the bedrock types we can't use. I did suggest you might go down to 100 acres. We had done 200 acres before, I think, but we'll see how that goes. We may have to go back up to 150 or something. I don't know. I don't know how many parcels are actually 100 acres, nor do I know if that's really big enough.
I got my experience, Catherine. I said, you know, if they're gonna go through the permitting process and go through 100 acres, seems awful small.
Okay.
You know,
okay.
I'm thinking, you know, if I had to make just a guess from what we've seen in other mm-hmm. places or seen throughout the state, you know, even at a 250-acre site with the ability to purchase more,
mm-hmm.
you're gonna go through this process. You know, 100-acre site.
So maybe we should revise it to at least 200 acres.
Well, I mean, that's up for you guys to decide as a board. You know, something to think about.
Okay.
Because there again, you know, it's gonna give you the ability to site a landfill that has potential for expansion in your
mm-hmm.
initial outing. So you're probably going to eliminate a lot of sites because of its size,
mm-hmm.
but in the same token, it's going to give you sites that are more realistic for looking towards the future.
Right. So we may want to change that.
Joanne, did you want to?
Yeah. So I noticed that in our correspondence, Paul has changed the abstract to include the potential environmental justice areas, as DEC noted. But if you go all the way through from the project objective, data sources, siting restrictions, preferred, none of them mention DEC's environmental justice areas. And I want that up front, you know, that is just as important as the geological.
Okay.
So it's in the
I will continue.
Project objectives, the site selection process.
Mm-hmm.
It's in the data sources that it's missing. It's in the siting restrictions, and it's in the preferred. Sorry, I stopped writing because the dog started barking, and I had to deal
mm-hmm.
with that. Preferred something. Preferred. Sorry. Flipping through this right now, or scrolling through. Okay, landfill siting restrictions. Preferred new landfill site features to be identified and evaluated. And while he has low population density areas, it also has to be non environmental potentially in environmental justice areas.
Okay.
We added NHL.
And I don't see the map attached to this.
No, I don't see the map either that he sent on.
Did I send you the map?
Yeah, he sent me the map. He sent me the map.
Okay. Well, anyway, there actually is a map. Now, I thought this map was going to be part of this proposal.
Yeah.
Unfortunately.
So he needs to go through and integrate
the maps that I have.
Potential environmental justice areas into every single category.
Yeah. My instructions to him this morning were, after the part where he has on the top of page 3, applicable DEC regulations and siting criteria specific to this project include, I said, after that, put down all of the stuff about the environmental justice stuff, which he did not do. So it's not complete.
It's not complete. So you're right, it should be there too.
Because I said, well, that'd be a logical place to reference all the stuff you got off the DEC website and how it relates to the project.
Yeah, but I think that we also have to be really upfront that it's integrated into every single thing. I mean, one of the good things about GIS is that you can do all these overlays.
Right.
Right. And so that needs to be integrated into each one of these categories.
Okay.
And until that's done, you know. I think we can't go forward on this because it doesn't serve the county well.
I agree. I did my best to make my point.
Okay.
And I even worked on it before I emailed everything to you. I don't think we can approve this at this point.
We couldn't do it on the subject to inclusion of basis.
But it's inclusion and not just inclusion, but integration into all of these different categories, all these headings.
Right, like under the primary goal and under the project objectives and.
Yeah, because basically all he did was stick it into the abstract.
Oh, is that what he did? Yeah.
Yeah. Sorry.
Okay. I was not in a position where I could read it, given that I was trying to get out the door.
Yeah.
And print a copy and send it to Melinda and all the other things that were trying to happen.
Yeah.
In minus 2 seconds. Okay, I think what we'll do then.
So if he does this, because we do want to move on this, it's something that if he meets the executive committee's criteria, we can sign off on it, but at this point, we can't.
How about you and I work with him on it to get it up to snuff where we want it?
Okay.
And then we could decide if we want to vote today or delay on it.
I don't just want it to be something that he adds on. I want it to be something that is totally integrated into this process.
And that he's going to do. Yes.
Yeah.
I agree.
Yes.
So you don't vote on it?
No.
Okay, so we don't vote on it. Okay, that's fine. I will work with him. I'll talk with you more, and we'll get it squared away.
Okay.
Great. My apologies.
Well,
thanks for bringing it forward this far.
Yep.
Yeah.
Close.
I mean, we can always do a quick special meeting at some point, too.
Right.
If we don't want to wait until
to do that by phone, right?
Exactly. Yep.
I mean,
with WebEx, you'd be like,
okay.
I guess we've got to figure out what we want to do. A landfill feasibility study. This is just a global looking at potential areas.
Oh, right.
I think it's really well done, Catherine, where you're at. You know, we add, you know, the other board members' concerns, and, you know, you're going to narrow it down so much. If there is potential sites, and then you take it to the next step. I mean,
right, exactly.
We don't want this to drag out. This is just to give us some real baseline information.
We have a really comprehensive list of step by step by step, which will erase a lot of places.
The title is seems good to me. Identify potential landfill sites. That's it. Mm-hmm. That's okay. That's a good place to start.
Mm-hmm. Right. So, okay. Then we'll, you and I will work with him on it. We'll get it squared away.
Okay.
Do we have any other new business?
I do not.
Okay. We are about to enter into an executive session.
Hey, hang on.
Which means we need a
motion
to do that.
I'll make a motion, Madam Chairman, that we open an executive session.
Yeah, we have to ask you to go too, but thank you for coming.
Have a good day.
Thank you.
Good to see you.
Take it easy.
I second the motion.
Okay, Charlie Landy makes the motion. Tom Kakandas seconds it. All in favor say aye.
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 We are prepared to enter into the executive session. Yeah. We have several critical matters to discuss today.
Stop the recording of the WebEx. That'd be appropriate, right?
Well, how is Joanne going to participate?
No, she'll still be in the meeting, but the recording of this meeting will not include this.
Oh, okay, great.
That's what we want.
That's fine.
Okay,
good
so
idea.
This time I'm going to stop the...
Stop recording.
Recording.
Yeah, but you're going to lose Ken Gilligan in that.
No, we won't. He'll still be there.
So I can see there's only the three participants.
Okay. All in favor?
Aye.
Okay, aye. Now, because of the minutes, I propose that we vote on our approval of the stipulation of voluntary dismissal.
What's the resolution number?
Please.
No, we do not have a resolution number, please. I would like to propose it this way, that we propose on the stipulation of voluntary dismissal pursuant to FRCP, whatever that is, case number 1:21-CV-161. If we approve of that stipulation.
Someone put a motion?
What she said.
Seconded.
Seconded?
Okay.
Seconded.
So,
Okay, we'll bring roll call vote. Catherine Feinkoffner.
Aye.
Lisa Mitten is not here. Charles Landy.
Yes.
Joanne Myers.
Aye.
Tom Kakandas.
Aye.
Did I miss anybody?
Nope, not this time.
Yeah. Okay, then 4-0.
Okay, good. Let's see. Next we have the Ulster County Resource Recovery Agency contract with the Teamsters Local 445, International Brotherhood of Teamsters, Collective Bargaining Agreement. For January 1st, 2021 to December 31st, 2025. Do we have a resolution for that or do we just vote for it?
The next number would be 3541.
Okay, so it'll be resolution 3541.
Bring it to a vote.
Right. Do I hear a motion to...
Madam Chair, I move that we vote to approve the proposed contract.
Teamsters
agreement.
Okay.
As you referenced it.
We'll have a roll call vote again. Catherine Feinkoffner.
Aye.
Charles Landy.
Aye.
Joanne Myers.
Aye.
Tom Kakandas.
Aye.
And Lisa Mitten is absent, so it passes 4-0.
Excellent. Anything else we need to discuss?
I don't
know. Okay, do I hear a motion to adjourn?
So moved.
Charlie Landy.
Seconded.
Tom Kakandas. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Call
Yeah.